Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, well, you know who she is. It's the one and only Drea Kaufman.
Hello.
I see that you've been unsnapped, so it's great to have you back. You know, the de-snapping
I'm sorry,
has happened.
I was never snapped in the first place. Thank you very much. I went to the website and checked. Thanos did not kill me.
You know, I don't think I ever did that. Anyway.
Every time I went, I was not snapped.
Man, that's pretty good. Yeah.
I know. I was impressed. I stopped pressing my luck at some point. But yeah.
I mean, you don't want to keep checking to see if you've been snaptured and then find out that you had when you hadn't been. So yeah, once is good, you know. So, well, welcome to Owl Post. This has nothing to do with Avengers Endgame.
Which has nothing to do with snaps or Thanos.
No, it does have to do with
if
Snape.
If you can guess what happened this weekend,
so,
y'all.
and who does not appear in this chapter. But we are at chapter 23, Christmas in the Clothes Ward. And before we dive into the chapter, don't forget that you can find us all over the place. In fact, we are wherever you get your podcasts. And Drea, I don't know if you knew this, but we had gotten a brand new iTunes review.
We've gotten
two iTunes reviews.
Someone else wasn't snapped.
I know. I'm so glad. It's nice to know that their name says Reliving the Magic, 5 stars. Their name is Proverbs 4:23, and they said, I just finished the chapter 6, and I really enjoyed it. It was my favorite so far. The nativity comparison made my heart happy. I'm rereading the first book along with you guys about a chapter a day, and then rewarding myself by listening to your podcast as I walk, which we're helping people be healthy. That's awesome. So they said, thanks for doing this. It's going to be a magical ride. Stay fantastic, Abby. P.S. I wish we knew more about Hedwig's namesake. I like to think that the wizard in question died on behalf of someone else or doing some other noble deed. R.I.P. Hashtag spoilers. Oh, I put the hashtag spoilers in there because it is a spoiler, but thank you so much. It is totally a spoiler. Yeah, Abby, that's great. We really appreciate you listening. And again, I like that we're part of a healthy lifestyle. So, Drea, that should be our like tagline, Owl Post, part of a healthy lifestyle.
Now, if only their healthy lifestyle could translate to a healthy lifestyle for me, we'd be all set.
You mean running around with a child all day has not helped your health?
Oh, it helped my exhaustion.
Oh, well, that's not the only thing. They said Owl Post 5 stars. Kitty Cat Casey said, an excellent podcast. I love how the hosts dive deep into each chapter and into each character. You do a fantastic job. Keep it up. Well, Kitty, we promise to keep it up as long as we have chapters to talk about here in the Harry Potter series. So, and crazy to think, I think we are at episode 117, and there are 200 chapters all throughout the book. So, you know,
that sounds really fast, but you guys, that's almost 2 more years. So you're stuck with us for a while.
Yeah. I mean, we're not going anywhere anytime soon. So you're stuck
with
us.
We have a whole lot to come.
Oh, goodness. But thank you for those reviews. We really appreciate people spending their hard-earned time. That's right. Their hard-earned time to give us, star rating review and let other people know what they think of the show and help other people find the show. So do that for us. We'll call you out here on the show. And thank you. You can also find us wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. So use the hashtag Owl Post. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. We're online at thenerdparty.com, where you can find all of the shows that happen here on The Nerd Party. I mean, pretty much any fandom you are interested in, we probably have a podcast for. And last but not least, maybe you would like to send us an email. Dre and I really do appreciate when people spend their hard-earned time to send us an email. And that's at thenerdparty.com/contact. You choose a show, you choose Outpost, and then that comes to us. So this chapter is one of those, Drea, where it legitimately picks up off the last phrase of the last chapter and just continues that thought. And we, the very beginning of this chapter is Harry dealing with this revelation that Dumbledore, or at least they, this conversation has been that Dumbledore's worried about Harry and that there's some link between him and Voldemort. And it really goes to Harry's head and him thinking that he's basically a weapon of Voldemort and he's the one who attacked, you know, Mr. Weasley somehow. And he just kind of wallows in this for the very beginning of this chapter because he can't let go of this idea. And in fact, he doesn't even want to talk to anybody else, and he avoids everybody else as much as possible at the beginning of this chapter. So Harry is in a super dark place at the beginning of this chapter.
This is like the epitome of letting your imagination run away with yourself, right? We'll come to find in this chapter that there's kind of not a reasonable explanation, but there's a good explanation for most everything kind of that Harry is experiencing. There's sort of a logical piece to all of it. But in the meantime, he sort of is just blowing everything out of proportion. He gets to the point where he's going to run away, and then he gets a visit.
Nothing like getting visited by a very sarcastic portrait.
Yeah, there's nothing like getting visited by a portrait, let alone a super sarcastic one.
You don't have that happen to you?
No. Maybe we should talk.
After the show. Yeah, probably a good idea.
Anyway. he gets visited by Sirius's great-grandfather?
Yeah, Phineas.
Yep. Phineas Nicholas. Again. Yep. And who has a message from Dumbledore for Harry. As Harry's, you know, packing a trunk, he's decided that living in Privet Drive with the Dursleys is better than putting any of his friends and family at risk. Well, he doesn't care about the Dursleys, so anybody else. I also don't think he thinks that anyone cares about the Dursleys, so his logic is they're safe. But he's convinced he's going to hurt someone if he stays there. He thinks about going back to Hogwarts, realizes he could hurt someone at Hogwarts, and just goes through this whole idea. He constructs this whole thing in his head where he's so dangerous that anyone he's around, he's going to hurt. And then, you know, Phineas shows up with a message from Dumbledore for him. And it's very straightforward.
Stay where you are.
Both you as a listener and that was the message that Harry
got. That's it. I mean, it's very, like you said, it's easy to remember. It's like straight to the point, stay where you are. And I love that Harry starts to get irate how mad he is, you know, about, oh, this is the same message I got, you know, when the Dementors attacked me, and why can't anybody tell me anything? And I just love that Phineas is like, you know, this is why I hated being a teacher. All you stupid young people who think you know absolutely everything. And he's like, have you ever thought to yourself that of all the times that I've followed Dumbledore's instructions, that it's never led me into harm? So maybe he has a point in doing these things, and he realizes more of the plans of the Dark Lord than you realize. Just the possibility, Harry. Just think about it.
Maybe this is bigger than you in a little bit. There's more going on. Maybe. I feel like that's a good reminder for all of us, though. Like, Harry or a teenager or anyone, every once in a while when you get really kind of down in something, and I feel like this is maybe a minor callback to some of the depression stuff too, is you know, think about some of the things that are a little bit bigger than you. And not that you're not important or anything crazy like that, but, you know, like maybe this is all part of something bigger and that what you're feeling and experiencing isn't as big as you feel like it is. And I feel like there's a little bit of that here, you know, not just there's a bigger plan here, but like, Harry, calm down. This sort of, and I always appreciate this. The portrait character reminds me of one of my favorite characters from Parks and Rec. It's Jen, the political consultant, who has to set Leslie straight when she's spiraling.
She's so and she's awesome. Like,
there's this moment where she's like, honey, you can trust me because I don't care enough to lie to you. So I feel a little bit like that too, the portrait. Like, there's no reason this portrait is trying to make Harry feel better. In fact, the portrait's just ranting about how much he hates adolescence. But it's like something here. It was the thing that snapped Harry out. It was the thing he needed to hear in that moment. And sometimes there's, you know, the tough message is the thing we all need to hear in that moment where we're really struggling. You need someone to be brutally honest with you and tell you how it is. So it's kind of a nice refresher. And it's a good way of communicating that message without it always having to come from, you know, Ron or Mrs. Weasley or anything like that. But we do get an unexpected guest that kind of adds to this, because this sort of snaps Harry back a little bit and at least gets him to sit put as he's instructed.
It really does. You know, he doesn't move, but then he still kind of sequesters himself upstairs and ignores everyone else. And yeah, I really appreciate that. Just to piggyback that real quick, because I think you're saying something really profound, which is truth can come from anywhere, right? And it doesn't necessarily, sometimes it's easier not coming from a friend, you know, hearing it from the most unlikely of sources. And I think that's the thing that we, you know, see there. And Harry's mad about the fact that Phineas is actually right, but he does acknowledge that he's right. But he hasn't quite got out of his funk. And, you know, the thing that kind of snaps him out of that is Hermione coming back. And I love the reason that she's back, because apparently skiing, which I can totally buy not being her thing. I just imagine Hermione a tangle of like skis and poles and like
and hair and everywhere
hair and in a snowdrift.
And I imagine that, but like she's holding a book, like how to ski 101 in the other hand. Like she couldn't do it all at once.
Apparently reading and skiing do not go together.
Someone needs to draw this for us, guys. Someone needs to make this happen.
Yes, please, please somebody do that and tweet us at Join Nerd Party with Outposts hashtag. That would be awesome.
But I think it's so interesting that she comes back, though, because that's one of those things where, you know, Harry thinks that everyone sort of is part of this construct he's designed in his head, is that everyone's afraid of him and that everyone thinks he's a weapon and everyone is on the same kind of thought process that he's on, right? Like they all are afraid of him now. They all kind of want him to go, but everyone doesn't want to, no one wants to talk to him. So when Hermione shows up, it brings sort of different light to everything.
And I love that she just, she forbids him from telling Ron why she's back, because she was telling him how great skiing was beforehand. So now she can't admit it to Ron that it's not. And she says, look, let's go down to your bedroom. Ron's mom's put a fire in there and we've got sandwiches. And it turns out that everybody else is there as well, like Ginny, the twins, Ron. Everybody's there. And I love that this moment happens, because this is where she brings back something from the second book. And I would say that Ginny verbally whips Harry's emotional ass in this scene. And I absolutely yes. love it, because she is so right. And I think she... Ginny has a streak in her of no-nonsense truth-telling that I think is going to be something that's going to be very interesting to watch grow in the series.
Ginny's got a tough love. She's got yes. a tough love approach.
Oh, yeah.
Which is something I really commend, and is actually very, very hard to still show you care, but be a little bit of a hard line when doing it. So yeah, I love the moment. Even reading it has a profound impact when she mentions, if you thought you were possessed by him, why wouldn't you talk to me? the only other person who has been possessed by him and could relate to how you're feeling. Like, it was just so logically laid out and straight to the point that, like, it does. It just whips him into shape. And it has that moment where, like, you're reading it, and even just now thinking back through it, it gives you a little bit of the goosebumps, and you're like, oh, that's right. That was real dumb, Harry. Good job.
When I love that he says, I forgot, and she's like, oh, well, lucky you. You know, like,
yeah.
I'm so glad you can't remember it, but I remember it every day. And then she begins to kind of quiz him about what's been happening to him. Has he been, you know, having long periods where he can't remember what's happened? And he says no. And she's like, well, then you haven't been possessed. And I love this moment because, again, this is one of the most unlikely places for this to kind of come from. You know, like, Ginny is really coming into her own as part of this group. And it's not Ron and it's not Hermione here that help bring Harry out of his fog and make him believe again. You know, it's Ginny who allows him to do that. And it's because of her experience with Voldemort. And I really love this because after this conversation, you know, Harry has this immense, you know, weight lifted on him, and this happiness and this relief of realizing he's not a weapon. This is something else, you know, and then this is where too, like Harry, this is where Hermione and Ron also kind of jump in talking about, you know, this kind of thing's happened to you before. And it's not like, you know, Voldemort could have taken you out of Hogwarts anyway, because Hermione's like, if you would just ever read Hogwarts of History, you'd know you can't just apparate and disapparate outside of Hogwarts. So, you know, they all combine here to really bring Harry out of this funk. And Christmas then with Sirius, he finally can enjoy it. And Sirius is just so excited to have everybody here that he's doing everything he can to make this just a joyful experience for everyone as well. And, you know, I love that there was this moment of Harry just kind of being in the pitch black and Ginny shines a light and they all bring him out of it. It's great. It's such a great scene.
Well, and not even thinking about what it does for Harry, just thinking about the emotional maturity it takes and her need to have a healthy relationship to this really traumatic thing that happened to her, to be able to not be consumed by it. It's clearly still powerful to her, but her to be able to use that to help others, like, that's a powerful thing, and it's not something a lot of people can do. And I don't know that I feel like Harry does something similar, and I think that's part of what is so impactful for him, is that he's seeing her do what he does for others, takes his pain, channels it into a learning lesson and a way to help others. And I think he's watching Ginny do that in a very healthy way. And that's it's also just a good lesson to learn that, you know, we don't have to be consumed by these horrific things that happen to us. We can move on from them. You don't have to forget them. They still happened. They still had an impact on you, but you don't have to, like, live by them. Like, they don't have to dictate how you live your life anymore. So, and she was so young when it happened that, you know, it's amazing that in the last, 4 years, she's been able to sort of come to terms with it. So it's just really nice to see that that level of trauma sort of handled in a healthy way, and not that, like, it ruined Ginny forever and now we have this crazy character who's consumed. You know what I mean? Like, we have enough of those coming up that we don't need, you know, another one. So it is just nice to see that sort of healthy portrayal of mental health that we don't see often.
Yeah, and part of that has to be due with the fact, I think, that, you know, the community that surrounds Ginny, right? And part of that, like you mentioned, is somebody like Harry, somebody like, you know, Ron and Hermione, and the friendships that, you know, Ginny also has at school and stuff. You know, everybody has kind of surrounded her and helped her, you know, become healthy again and find a safe place to be able to do that. And that's what they, like you mentioned, she does back for Harry here. And then Ron and Hermione mimic that, and it allows them to be able to have this Christmas. And, you know, Christmas starts off wonderful. They're getting presents. But then, you know, Percy old little tool bag has to ruin it.
Yeah, that guy, I hate that guy. He's now up there with Malfoy for me. I hate that guy. So he gets his Christmas jumper and sends it back with no note. Hasn't visited his dad in the hospital. I do love that, you know, they've been trying to calm her all morning, and then they let Lupin take a stab at it, and they're like, let's let him calm her down, and then we'll go downstairs. Like, let's avoid her for a few minutes. It shows how deeply affected she is by Percy's sort of betrayal of the family,
mm-hmm.
and how much it just kind of sucks, and how tight-knit they are. And, I mean, we've talked about it before, but I don't, you know, we've mentioned, like, we don't know why. It's hard to see how someone can so quickly turn their back on their family, and how persuasive fear really can be.
Well, and how persuasive the idea of power can be. You know,
yes.
I think that's what Percy's going for, and that's what's kind of turned into such a turd nozzle. You know, he's just awful. And so
he's such a mouth breather.
Definitely a mouth breather. It's interesting too, because Hermione is going to give Creature a gift, and it's a quilt that she's got for him to help with his little hovel that he has, like, underneath the cupboards. Basically, he sleeps kind of where Harry used to sleep.
I was thinking that too.
Yeah. And they can't find Creature, and they're talking to Sirius about that, and Sirius is like, well, I'm sure he'll turn up. And he's like, I love how Harry's like, well, when you told him to go the other day, do you think he, like, left? And Sirius is like, oh, well, he can't really leave the house, you know, without clothes. And Harry's like, well, but Dobby left
Dobby
the Malfoys, and then he had to punish himself.
Actually.
Yeah. And so I just like how Sirius is like, well, I'm sure he's fine. Like, but this is an interesting question.
I couldn't get a good read on that one, if whether Sirius didn't believe it, or if Sirius, like, did he not believe that he could leave? And he's like, oh, that's all right, it's not possible. Or was he like, I'm going to play this off, but really I'm worried. Like, is it the parent thing? Or
I'm wondering that too. You know, I don't know. And I think that's something that maybe in the storyline we'll kind of see later on, to see what happens. But it does, I feel like she's leaving us some breadcrumbs for sure. And I do love when they get to go to the hospital and they visit Mr. Weasley. And apparently, you know, he doesn't want to tell him, Ollie, what he and the intern doctor or healer have tried. But, well, he thought maybe a little bit of muggle medicine might help, since nothing else was helping. And apparently stitches are not the way to go with this kind of infirmity malady. You know, they did not help the situation.
No, not at all. And the kids, I like how well the kids know the social cues, and they're like, well, we'll go get some tea.
That was fantastic. And I love that as they're on their way there, they run into somebody also from the second book.
Yeah, this is a very second book heavy chapter. His bright blue eyes and dazzling white teeth. I had forgotten that we run into Lockhart here. It makes more sense than the movie by a long shot. Because we end up going to, like, the permanently magically messed up ward.
And I really, you know, I appreciate this whole scene because, you know, we run into Lockhart, which leads us, you know, to the long-term ward of people who have maladies that cannot be remedied. They can only be possibly be made better. And the fact that, you know, the witch is like, oh, he never gets guests, and so they kind of, like, feel compelled to follow even though they don't really want to
play along.
Yeah. And, you know, they then run into somebody else that is in this ward that well, Harry knows why they're there, but Ron and Hermione and Ginny did not. And we finally kind of reveal to a much larger group what had happened to the Longbottoms, because Neville and his grandmother are there, and we get to meet his mother briefly here. And they learn what Bellatrix did to his parents. And it's a very, you know, the chapter started off kind of in a dark place, and it, and in many ways it kind of ends in one too, where we kind of see the results of such evil on good people. And it's a very sad and melancholy end to this chapter.
It's really interesting because everyone's surprised and they're all like, I didn't know. And Harry's like, I mean, I did, but I wasn't supposed to say anything, you know. And it was heartbreaking to hear, like, his grandmother talking about how, you know, like, oh, you shouldn't be embarrassed. You should be proud of them. They're heroes. As his mom hands him, like, a bajillionth bubblegum wrapper because she's just lost her mind. It just really brings you back to every once in a while they bring you back and it's kind of more lighthearted and you're kind of reminded of Lockhart, who also is kind of, if you think about it, it's kind of disturbing the fact that, like, Ron inadvertently put him permanently in the hospital. But it's just so, it's so interesting that they come back, they circle back and remind you how serious this matter that we're dealing with is and how big and grand the stakes are. You know, we had a couple chapters ago, Molly's dream about all of them dying, and now, you know, you have Mr. Weasley attacked, and now you have this knowledge of Neville's parents never going to come back. It's tough. It's really tough. And it ends on kind of that sulken note.
Yeah, I really, you know, I think the thing you mentioned too, you know, about Neville getting the bubblegum cracker from his mother and his grandmother telling him to throw it away, and he keeps it. Harry sees him keep it. And, you know, I think you kind of realize, you know, Harry has this other family now. You know, he doesn't have his parents, but he has this family now with the Weasleys and with Hermione. And, you know, we kind of see that Neville doesn't really have that here, you know. And we also see, too, his grandmother being very upset that he hasn't told his friends what happened to his parents, because she sees it as a way of him not being proud of who they were.
Being embarrassed by them.
And embarrassed by them, yes. And in some ways, I think there's probably a little bit of that, but I mean, I think it's, for Neville, it's more the fear of just it being one more thing that people will make fun of him for, and so he has kept it to himself. But I think it's going to be very interesting to see as we move forward if this brings Neville further into that group now, because there is this level of trust and understanding of who Neville is and where he comes from and when, you know, what's on his heart, you know, what's constantly with him, which is the fact that, you know, his parents are still alive, but they will never know who he is because they can't. And so I think this is a really effective way to end this chapter. And just like you said, really remind us of where we are. And what's at stake.
Yeah, and I always read this section and Neville not wanting to share about his family. I never really thought about it as something else for people to make fun of him about, but that makes a lot of sense. I always just read it as he was afraid. He was afraid, and he talking about it and not talking about it is easier for him than having to process what that means and to live with reliving this fear of losing his parents when they're not really gone, but they are gone, because he clearly loves them. He kept the bubblegum wrapper. He's not embarrassed about them. I think I always just read it as he's just afraid, which was always so interesting to me too, that they put him in Gryffindor, because I felt like in that case, the Sorting Hat sees like an inner braveness in him that he doesn't even see in himself. But yeah, I always just took it. Neville's kind of, I don't want to say a cowardly person. He just is someone who is very, he shuts down very much so in the face of fear. And I always took it as he was just afraid of what happened to his parents mm-hmm. and all the consequences. And he is one of the few people who understands the gravity of what is happening here. And that frightens him. And he doesn't want to talk about it because he isn't strong and brave like Harry or Ron, at least not at this point and not in that same way. That's how I kind of always took it, is it was more of a fear-based thing and not even an embarrassment or doesn't want to get made fun of. And that's probably definitely part of it. But
well, I think, you know, just on top of what you're saying too, you know, the part of what we're seeing in this book though is there is a bravery in him, you know, going to Dumbledore's army meetings and learning to defend himself and those kind of things. We're seeing that kind of thing start to slowly come out in Neville as he's really into that practice and the wanting to be there. And so, again, I think this is going to be a key to allowing him to be able to move forward and kind of maybe come out of some of the shell that he's been in. And part of that, you know, it can be easier to do that when somebody or a group knows your secret, you know? And, you know, I think in a lot of ways, you know, I think you've hit it on the head, but I also think there's, you know, it's not just fear, but I think there's a sorrow in him, and that deep-seated sorrow he has not been able to really share with anybody, you know, because his grandmother doesn't seem like the feeling type like that. And, but now that this group knows it, you know, Harry knows what that's like. And so I think it's going to open some of those doors. And I think that'll be really fun to be able to see kind of play out more. You know, we're going to...
I also think there's an element of it where he is afraid of not living up to those expectations. His grandmother's really tough on him. And she brags about how amazing his parents were and how they survived all of this torture as aurors, and they were amazing and members of the Secret Order originally and all that stuff. And, you know, we've seen time and time again in these books that Neville's kind of a klutz and he's kind of fumbly and he has a real affinity for herbology, but hasn't really shown a strong affinity towards anything else. And I think there's a fear in him too that he's disappointing them, or if people knew, they'd be holding him to higher expectations. And I think there's just so much wrapped up in this, and that he's, you know, it's better for him to be quiet and not bring any attention to himself than disappoint just his grandmother, than potentially disappoint like anybody who knows the story.
Absolutely. No, I 100% agree. And, you know, I think that's something that I love about this book, is that it really gets into the complex emotions of these characters much deeper than maybe we ever really have before. And on top of that, it's not just for, you know, our characters that we already knew, but it is those more periphery characters. Like we mentioned in this book, you know, we have a moment where a Ginny really steps up, you know, we have this moment with Neville. So we're starting to open the doors for other characters to really grow and become more of who they're going to be throughout the rest of the series. And I think that's the key to this book, that this is the book of internal struggles. And it's one of the things that makes it sometimes difficult to read, but it's also the book that makes it so important to the rest of the series, because most of these characters, as we mentioned before, Harry specifically, going through this refining fire. And if they don't go through these experiences in this book, they won't be able to handle what's about to come. And so it's the difficult part of the story where people's feet are to the fire, and it makes it hard to be a part of that story sometimes. But it's a key part of any growth for any character or human being. I mean...
as we point to ourselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think this is also a good chapter where you begin to sort of realize the parallels that Neville and Harry share. They're not identical, but they're very similar. And they've just kind of done different things with their, you know, you always think about, well, what if I had done X, Y, and Z? And they're similar stories with different decisions being made. We've sort of had Harry and Voldemort and their parallels. Now we're getting a lot of Harry and Neville parallels in this book. And I think this is just another kind of good good insight into that, that I feel like is also some of the breadcrumbs that she's laying out there.
Absolutely. Well, next week we'll have chapter 24 and Occlumency. So stay tuned for that next week. But Drea,
and I will not be pronouncing the title of that chapter.
you don't want to have a little Occlumency?
I just can't pronounce
that. Yeah, it's not an easy word. I've had to re-listen to the pronunciation many, many times to be able to do it. So there was luckily that pronunciation guide that actually would, you know, say the words for you, and I just would play certain words over and over and over and over and over again. So
aluminium.
Yeah, exactly. Aluminium. Oh, I just love the way British people say that. Anyway, Drea, if anybody wants to talk about aluminium or maybe occlumency with you, where can they find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me here on the network doing the wonderful show with John Mills, Aggressive Negotiations, talking all about Star Wars each and every week. I am also on the Trek FM network talking about two things. Well, lots more than two things, but one is The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. The second, where the many things come into play, which is the 602 Club, where Christy Morris and I talk through, well, all the fandoms we love. And you can find me doing Cinema Stories with Courtney as we talk about films through the lens of faith. But we want to say thank you so much for checking that outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.